When I was chaplain at St. Mary's High School, I led a lot of pilgrimages to Rome, six to be exact. And I finished there in 2013, and then in 2014, I went out to Monokin and Wilton to be the pastor out there. And in 2015, I was called and asked to lead the trip again because the main guy who led it couldn't go, and he didn't trust anybody else to do it except me because I had done it so many times with him. So I said yes. As we were planning the trip, I realized that in 2015, Pope Francis had ordered that the Shroud of Turin would be on display, which is really odd because usually the Shroud of Turin is taken out every 25 years, every Jubilee. So the last time it was taken out was 2020, and then it should be taken out in 2025. But for some reason, the Pope said, take it out and show it in 2015. And when the Pope says, do something, you do it. And so it was on display, and I came to the planning group, and I'm like, you guys, the Shroud of Turin is on display, and we're going to be there in Rome while it's out. And they're like, so? And I'm like, we got to go. And they're like, that's like 500 miles away from Rome. I'm like, I don't care. We can do it in a day. They have bullet trains, 4 hours up, 3 hours in the city, 4 hours back. And nobody thought this was a good idea. Nobody except me. And I'm fighting and fighting. All of a sudden, I'm like, I'm leading this trip, right? And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, then we're going. And they're like, we can't afford you. Like, we've already given final prices. And it was just round and round. I said, finally, I was like, you know what? How about this? If I raise the money, are you okay with that? And they're like, yeah. Which drives me nuts because it all comes down to finances, right? They weren't thinking about the kids at all. Now, to be honest, it was about the kids. But I really wanted to go. Really bad. And so we ended up doing it. I raised $10,000, took 120 kids, went to Rome train station, 4 hours up on a train, 3 hours in the city, running around, seeing the Shroud, 4 hours back in time for supper. It was a wild trip. And for me and many of the students, that crazy little trip, that side trip, turned out to be the highlight, not of just the trip, but of my life. On Friday, one of the kids of the school, we were out in the parking lot at dismissal, and he's like, Father, what's the coolest, craziest thing you've ever seen in your life? And on a dime, I was like, the Shroud of Turin. It is the craziest, wildest, most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. Now, for those of you that don't know the Shroud of Turin, it is the image of, it's the linen cloth that Jesus was buried in, and there's an image on the cloth of him, the front side of his body and the back side of his body. But what's most amazing about the Shroud of Turin is how the image came to be. So no one's really sure exactly how it happened, because when they first started studying it, everybody thought it was from the Middle Ages. Everybody thought it was a painting. Like, some artist had painted the crucified Lord as kind of a relic or a memoir of the crucifixion to be venerated. When they studied it microscopically, it blew their minds. See, when you paint, you add something to layers, right? You add layers, and it seeps through the cloth. When they looked at it under a microscope, the Shroud doesn't have an image on it because layers were added. The Shroud has an image on it because layers were removed. What do I mean by that? They were burned away. You guys don't look shocked enough. There is still blood marking, soaked through the Shroud, on the wrists, on the side, on the feet. The scourge marks from the blood are abundantly clear. We see a man, an image of a man on the Shroud that depicts exactly what happened in the gospel. Crucified, scourged, crowned with thorns. It's incredible. And here's what's crazy. The layers that are removed are so thin that if they would have burned any more, they would have incinerated the whole cloth. There are many theories how this happened. Probably the most prominent was a nuclear physicist who stated, after studying the Shroud, the results show this.
The image must have been created.
Now remember, everybody, you know, all the atheists, all these people, this is a relic of the Middle Ages. Okay, first century or Middle Ages? We sure as heck don't have this type of technology. You ready? It was created by some form of electromagnetic energy or radiation that emanated from a flash of light at short wavelength and left a photonegative image on the shroud. The heat from the flash was just enough to singe the microscopic top layer of the linen, but not so much heat that it incinerated the linen cloth. This is the best part. In order to remake this,
this is amazing,
you would need 15,000 high-powered lasers that would all need to fire at the exact same time for something of like 1/1,000,000th of a second. Anything more, you incinerate the cloth. Anything less, you don't leave the image. Last time I checked, we didn't have high-powered lasers in the Middle Ages, nor did we have them in the first century. So everybody's like, we don't know. Maybe he rose from the dead. Maybe that's what caused this. Maybe energy pulsating through the resurrected Christ burned an image onto this linen cloth to remind us forever. Not forget what love is. One of the greatest, the exposition of the shroud, in turn, it said, when you walked in, it said, the greatest love. The greatest love. The scriptures today seem to me to be a great reflection on what we see in the figure of the shroud and a reminder of what Jesus commands. You guys, he commands it of us. He says, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I loved you. No greater commandment, no greater love than a man has than to lay down his life for his friends. In the shroud, we see an image of a man who laid down his life in horrific fashion for you and for me. And when you look at it, it reminds you of something. Just as you look at the crucifix, it reminds you of something. That love is not just a feeling. Love acts. Love moves. Love sacrifices. Love lays down its own wants, wishes, and desires for another. And in fact, if love doesn't act, if it doesn't move, if it doesn't sacrifice, if it's just a feeling, then love is an illusion. And that's why I think so many relationships fail in the modern day and age. Because they're built on love as a feeling. As I stood before that image and looked at it, and looked at the face, that was quite literally the closest I've ever been to seeing the actual face of love. I wept and wept and wept. And certainly, to be true, some of these tears were tears of joy to see something so amazing. Some of them were tears of love to look upon the one that I love, that I gave my life for. But overwhelmingly, they were tears of failure. How often I fail to do the very thing Jesus commanded us to do. He didn't command much. He offered a lot of things and said, this would be great for you. As a matter of fact, he only commanded two things, to love and to forgive. That is the bare minimum to be Christian. You must love and you must forgive. And I fail at that. And I fail because I try to do it alone. You know, he says, it's not you who chose me, but I who chose you to go and bear fruit. What's the fruit? What is God looking for? The fruit is love. And it comes from being connected to him. You remember last week, the vine and the branches? This is not a trick question, okay? Where does fruit appear on a vine? Is it on the vine or on the branches? Yeah, it's on the branches. Rockstar. But where does the power to produce fruit come from? It comes from the vine. That's what Jesus is trying to get to us. He's trying to get God's power flows in and through us when we are connected to him. And in that way,
we manifest love to the world. The saints unanimously agree on this, you guys. We will be judged on one thing. Did you love? That's it. Did you come to Jesus? Did you cling to him so that he could transform your heart and make it more like his? So that you could bring his love into the world, which is longing for it, and it would be done through you? Or did you do it alone?
You know, Bishop Vedder was just in town for the University of Mary commencement. And I got to interview him for the Stand Firm Productions little YouTube thing we do. And he told this story. I want to steal it from him because it fits really well today.
You know what a pale calf is?
I just learned what a pale calf is. A pale calf is, it's a calf that eats out of a pail. It's really quite simple if you just think about it. But you take it away from the mother and feed it from the pail so that you can still use the milk from the mother for dairy products, right? And as you feed the calf, it grows, it gets bigger and bigger. And so Bishop Vedder's dad gave them all, the kids, if they got a certain age, they got a pale calf. And they had to raise the calf until it got big enough, and then they could sell it. And they got to keep the money. Nice little thing, you know, that a dad did for his kids. So he gets his calf. And he's like, I was taking care of it. I was doing everything. And as Bishop Vedder goes, he's like, and the little sucker got sick. And he's like, you know, I was sitting there and I thought, maybe if I give it more milk. Bad idea. Maybe if I let it out, or keep it in the barn. Bad idea. And he's like, and it died. And so little Austin Vedder is sitting on a little heap of straw next to his dead calf. And his dad comes in to talk to him. And he said, he started crying and he said, Dad, I did my best. And his father looked at him and said, no, you didn't. Your best would have been to come to me and ask for help. And when I heard that, you guys, I just teared up, because that is the voice of the Father. That's the voice of love. Here's the deal, folks. There's going to be a lot of dead calves in your life. There is. Whatever it is, when you're sitting on the couch and you've lost your job, when you're sitting in the hospital next to the one you love who's dying, when you're looking into the mirror of a shattered life because of a stupid decision you made, and when we're crying, trying to justify our actions, and we say, I did the best I could, God the Father comes with his gentle voice and says, no, you didn't. The best would have been to come to me. And I would have been there with you. I would have helped. I would have stood by you in the mess that you were in. So where are you going to go to fix your problems when they're out of your control? When they're beyond you? You going to do it alone? Or are you going to go to the Father? The one who is love. The one who sacrifices, the one who acts, the one who moves, the one who did that. Let us pray in this Mass to cling to him. As a branch clings to the vine, may our hearts cling to Christ so that he can transform our hearts, make them more like his, and then he will bring his love to the world through us.